Okay, everybody. Cross-examination. Cross-examination is my favorite, but I will tell you this, even for the advanced debater, cross-examination, I think, is the last skill that you develop as an advanced debater. It's the hardest skill. It's the hardest thing to really master. So I'm hoping that the techniques we learn here will help you really get better at this skill. Cross-examination can make the difference between winning and losing debate rounds. A lot of people think it's just 3 extra minutes of prep time, but it's actually can be very crucial to winning debate rounds if it's done correctly. We're going to learn how to ask good questions and avoid bad questions in order to make the most effective use of cross-examination. Okay, for Candy, raise your hand. What is the primary purpose, the most important objective of cross-examination? Set up something your partner can use in the next speech. Set up arguments for later in the round. That is the primary objective. Okay, things to remember. Cross-ex isn't flowed, normally. I mean, the judge can flow if he wants to, but you know there's not really a column for it on the flow sheet. And that's because questions are not arguments. If I ask you a question, I have not made an argument yet. The key thing here, and even advanced debaters miss this sometimes, ask questions and cross-ex, make arguments in speeches. What do I mean by that? For example, how many times have you heard a debater get up and say in the 1NC, well, I want to know where they're going to get the funding from, and I want to know how their solvency works, and I want to know who the expert was who said so-and-so. I want to know this, and I want to know that. You ever heard debaters do that? Let me ask you this. If those are all the things you wanted to know, why didn't you ask in cross-ex? You had a 3-minute cross-ex. You want to know all that? Ask them. That's what cross-ex is for. Those questions are not reasons for me to vote for you. The fact that you want to know a list of things is not a reason for me to vote for you. It doesn't persuade me. So in your 1NC, make arguments. Judge, on his first solvency card, he said this, but the card actually says that. Therefore, don't buy his solvency. Rather than saying, I want to know how his solvency works. Okay, the fact that you want to know it doesn't mean I'm going to vote for you. So ask questions across X, make arguments in your speech, and don't get them reversed. What people have trouble sometimes is coming up with material to put into their questions. They don't know what to ask. So I want to give you some tips here on things you can ask in cross X. Here's an example. Let's imagine that they read this card. This is an actual card that came from a source book a few years ago, not Blue Book. I wouldn't do this. This is the tagline they read. This is the source. The source is valid. Don't cross-examine about the source. I don't care about that. There's the tagline. There's the card. What question would you ask in cross-ex? Your solvency card about local purchase suicides. Does it say it would reduce suicides? Well, it says it would help farmers. Where in the card does it say that? Well, it says current food aid hurts farmers. Does it say your new cash aid solves for suicides? Not exactly, but okay, thanks. Let's move on. Boom. That's where you were headed. Okay, where does it say it solves for suicides? Oh, well, it doesn't. Okay, thanks. Boom. Game over. That's where we get right to the heart of the matter in the cross-ex. In the next speech, his partner's going to have to say, my first solvency argument is there's no reduction in farm suicides. Judge, he admitted in cross-ex that card didn't say anything about solving for suicides. So you can drop that solvency one argument right out of the round. Because he admitted in cross-ex, which he did. Challenge implicit assumptions. On your card about farm suicides, what's the root cause of farm suicides? They're all going bankrupt. Does it say that in the card? No. Isn't that card assuming that food aid is occurring in India today? Yes. Did any of your evidence say that it was? No. Are you assuming that market failure is the cause of food shortages? Yes. Did any of your evidence say that it was? No. Look back at the card again. Look at this. When famine is a matter of market failure rather than crop failure, okay? Now this card was supposed to be used in the context of India. Okay, aren't they assuming that that's the case in India, if they're using this in an India case? Yeah. Okay, so is it the case that famine is a matter of market failure in India today? Oh, well, yeah. Does it say that in the card? No. So there's an implicit assumption built into the card that isn't justified by the evidence. The evidence says if it's market failure, then this will work. Okay, is it market failure in India? Oh, I don't know. The card didn't say. Okay, so we caught them with an assumption built in that they didn't justify. Okay, how do we set up arguments for your partner? Here's an example. Somebody said earlier, know what evidence you've got in your negative briefcase. Absolutely right. Why? Because I can ask cross-ex questions that link back exactly to evidence cards that I have in my brief. When you do that, really great things happen. For example, so your harm to evidence says high prices are going to happen if we leave the status quo alone, right? Right. Your plan is going to eliminate any chance of high prices, right? Right. Okay, thanks. Now, it doesn't sound like I got much out of him. But in fact, if I have a brief that says low commodity prices are a bad thing, I've just gotten him to give me the link to that disad. He's eliminating high commodity prices. Now I can run my low commodity price disad, which I've got back in my brief. Notice I don't clue him in on that. I'm not going to explain that to him, of course. But he's now given me the link to an argument that my partner can now make. So if you know you've got some briefs, ask questions that lead into the briefs that you've got. Here's a really powerful one. Ask for specifics. Sometimes debaters read cards that just talk about general concepts, and they don't give you the specifics. I think we've got a transcript here on the next slide of an actual cross-ex that I did with some students one time. On your goal of protecting liberty, what specific liberties are being denied in the status quo? On your foreign policy harm, can you give a specific example of where Saudi Arabia has caused a bad change to U.S. foreign policy? Okay, maybe they've got Dr. Expert who says Saudi Arabia has a bad influence on U.S. foreign policy. Okay, fine. Maybe Dr. Expert believes that. But then you cross-examine and say, okay, give me an example of where Saudi Arabia has influenced our foreign policy. Oh, well, they did this and that. Does evidence say that? Oh, well, no. Okay, thanks. Now I've got an argument. He can't name a single example of where Saudi Arabia had a bad influence on our foreign policy. Here's another good cross-ex question. Ask why. On contention two, the agricultural downturn, why do prices go up? Well, I think it's because supply goes down. Does the card say that? Well, no. Why would the supply go down? I'm not sure. Okay, now what have we got him to do? We've got this guy totally confused about his own evidence now. Just by asking the simple question, why? And he can't explain his own evidence to me or the judge. Now I can create some arguments out of this. Here's another tip. Get to a single point of failure. What do I mean by a single point of failure? Well, let's imagine the affirmative team is running a increased nuclear power plant. And the reason why we can't do nuclear power today is because the public opposes it. I've got a card that says that. Okay, fine. In cross-examination, again, knowing what evidence I have in my briefcase, I'm going to ask a question that's going to lead into my evidence. I'm going to ask this question. On your inherence in contention, are you claiming that the reason that we aren't increasing nuclear power today is because of legal barriers? We're claiming attitudinal barriers. People are afraid of it, so they're not building any more plants. So public attitudes are the only thing stopping the status quo from doing your plan, right? Yeah, I guess so. Thanks, let's move on. What card do I have in my briefcase that I'm going to read in the 1NC? Yeah, I'm going to read a card that says public supports nuclear power. What's he going to try to do in the 2A? He's going to try to get up there and read a card that says, oh, but there's all these excessive regulations. Can he do that? Well, he can try, but what's going to happen if he tries? What did he say in cross-X? Oh, he said in cross-X, public attitudes are the only thing stopping. So now if he tries to get up later in the round and say, oh, but we've got these legal restrictions. Wait a minute, Judge. He said in cross-X the public attitudes were the only thing stopping because I asked him, single point of failure, is this the only thing? If he says yes, I got him. He can't come up now with legal barriers and all that stuff. I got him to a single point of failure. If I beat that, I win inherency. So I'm going to even preempt him, try to stop him from even trying to argue it. You know, he can try if he wants, but I've spiked him now. So sometimes asking questions about, is this the only thing, can give you some leverage in a cross-ex. Okay, speculating beyond the evidence. Again, one of your most powerful questions is, says who? Or, phrased more politely, did the evidence say that? On the first disad, increased risk of war, do other countries in the region have the capability to carry out the threat of war? Yes. Did the evidence say that? Well, it said they were threatening a war if we change our policy. But does the evidence say they have the capability to carry out the threat? Well, not exactly. Okay, got him. He's speculating beyond the evidence. And now my partner can argue, Judge, he admits in cross-ex his evidence doesn't actually say that. And I can take that argument out of the round. Don't let them get away with weak answers. Too many debaters give up when the other guy gives them a weak answer. They just accept it and walk away. Or they accept it and move on. Instead of getting to the actual answer that they're looking for. Here's a transcript of an actual cross-ex I did with some students. I was asking the questions, as you might guess. Okay, on your goal of increasing and protecting liberty, what specific liberties are being threatened by illegal immigration today? The liberties we enjoy as American citizens. Is that a good answer? No, it's a terrible answer. What specific liberties? Well, our evidence said we need liberty to uphold the rule of law and democracy. Which specific liberties are being denied? Liberties we enjoy as American citizens. All right. Give an example. Okay, now I'm going to help him out a little bit. So if they're not helping you, you start helping them. I'll give an example, like freedom of speech, because I know that there's no way you can prove that illegal immigrants are stopping freedom of speech, right? Well, no, but just liberty in general. Is there a specific example of a specific freedom guaranteed in the Constitution that's being denied to someone? Not really, but okay, thanks, let's move on. Okay, finally I got him. Okay, don't accept weak answers. Okay, ask to see the evidence. You have the right to ask for every single piece of evidence that's read into the round by the other team. Even if it's read in rebuttals, you can lean over and say, let me have that evidence, when they get done with their speech. You have the right to ask for every card. Everybody has the right to see everything. Anybody gives you a hard time about that, you get upset. Not literally, but... Sorry? Yeah, get up there and complain about it. Judge, they refuse to give us their evidence. That's not ethical. They can't do that. All right, avoiding bad questions. I'll bet many of you in this room have made some of the mistakes on these slides, but you're not going to again, because now you know better. Don't ask a question that allows him to ramble on with an extension of his constructive. He already had 8 minutes. You want to give him 3 more? I sure don't. And some people ask questions like, well, do you think these harms are really that bad? What do you think he's going to say to that? Do you think he's going to say, oh, no, you're right. I just made all that stuff up. He's not going to say that. Do you think these harms are really that bad? Absolutely, Judge. Let me explain to you again how awful these harms are. Millions are going to die and people are suffering and blah, blah, blah. He's not going to help you with that. Don't ask him to repeat how bad his stuff is. Are your impacts significant? What you're really asking him is, Judge, you're asking, okay, opponent, do you really think your evidence is good? What do you think he's going to say? Don't ask him questions about does he like his own evidence. And for sure, you don't want to ask him something like, well, do you think that disad will happen if our plan is implemented? Absolutely. That's why I read it. So don't ever ask him questions. Just allow him to repeat his own arguments like that. Okay, never, ever, ever ask for more evidence. Never, ever. Advanced debaters do not do this. Novice and average debaters do, but advanced ones do not ever ask for more evidence. Let me explain to you why. This is one of the worst cross-ex questions you can ever ask. Because here's the kind of answer you get if you have a sharp debater. My partner did this one time. Do you have any more evidence on harm one? Sure, I got 2 more cards. You want me to read them? Oh, well, no. Why'd you ask? Could you bring them up in your next speech? Well, once we hear your partner's response to the evidence we already gave, then we'll see what additional evidence we need to bring up. Do you really want him to have more evidence? No. I want him to have less evidence, not more. Don't ask for things you don't want. Ask him about the evidence he read in the round, not about the evidence he didn't read. I don't care if he's got a million more cards over on his desk. I'm going to ask him about the one that he read in the round. Because those million don't exist if they're never read in the round. Maybe he'll forget and never read them. Ask him about what was in the round. That's the only legitimate subject of cross-examination, is material that has been raised in the round. Don't ask questions that aren't really questions. I've seen questions like these at nationals, and they're horrible questions. Are you aware is the beginning of an argument, not a question. Are you aware is an attempt to introduce new evidence into the round through the guise of a question. Let me tell you this, his awareness is not evidence of anything. Whether he's aware or not aware is not persuasive in the round. It doesn't matter if he's aware of it. So why are you asking him? You never want to ask him a question like, well, didn't our evidence say that that harm wouldn't happen? What do you think he's going to say? No, it didn't say that. In fact, your expert didn't even know what he was talking about. Okay? Never ask him about your plan. Well, doesn't our plan say that we're going to do this and that? No. But didn't we say in our plan this? But it won't work. But, okay? Don't cross-examine him about your plan. He's not going to explain it the way you want it explained. That's his job to oppose your plan, not to explain it. Again, ask them about their evidence and their arguments 100% of the time. Never ask the other guy about your arguments or your plan or your evidence. Didn't you hear my partner's evidence? It said so-and-so. Yeah, but I didn't believe it. That's how I'd answer that question. So, okay, boom. So what did you get out of me? Nothing. Okay, don't ask questions after the point's been made. Some people... Oh, they make a cool point, so they keep asking the same question 5 more times just to irritate the guy. Don't do that. Once you got what you wanted, say thanks, let's move on. Because he might just clarify his answer once he realizes that you think this is really important. You don't want him clarifying the answer. You just want him to get that answer and move on. Here's another one that'll save you some time. Usually, 99% of the time, don't waste time asking questions about their funding. Why? Well, first of all, the first question you're going to ask across X is, can I have a copy of your plan, right? That's what I would always ask a 1AC. So you take the copy of the plan, you start looking at it. Hopefully the funding is written down in the plan, right? So what do you need to ask him about? It's written. Just read it. You don't need to cross-examine him about it. Secondly, funding is usually the least important part of the plan. So don't waste time cross-examining about the least important part of the plan that's already written down anyway that you can just read. There's one rare exception. That is, if you have a specific piece of evidence that proves how much the plan will cost, and it sounds like it's going to be way in excess of what their plan calls for. In that case, you might want to nail them down and get them to name a specific number, and then read your evidence card that says it's going to cost $1 trillion more than that, and then beat them on solvency. That's a very rare exception. But if you've got that card, fine. Don't ask questions for which you don't need the other team's answer to prove the point. Okay, here's another one. Don't ask about issues or evidence not raised thus far in the round. In other words, phantom evidence. Well, hasn't the president announced a new policy that implements some of your plan? If you asked me that question, I'd say, not to my knowledge. Of course, I'm leaving the door open in case they've got a card, you know. Didn't Dr. Expert that you quoted also write another article in which you predicted a $3 trillion economic loss? I don't know. That's up to you to prove. Again, you're asking me about stuff that's outside the round that I didn't read. You're not asking me about my evidence. You're asking me about some hypothetical article that might exist out there or might not. I don't know. Well, what if I read evidence that shows that illegal immigrants are returning to Mexico on their own? Good for you. I'd like to see it. You can't cross-examine me about your evidence that you haven't read yet. How can I answer questions about that? So, again, ask him about his evidence and his arguments that have been raised in the round. Never ask to get the other guy's opinion about anything. Not ever, not even once, not even when you think it's really cool. Because this is the kind of answer you'll get if the other guy is sharp. Now, in your Smith evidence that you just read, isn't it possible Smith could be biased? No. That's what I'd say. I'm not going to give you that because I think he's a very highly qualified expert, and I think he's saying the exact truth. You're asking me my opinion. That's my opinion. Here's an example. Don't use analogies and hypotheticals in cross-ex either. Well, let's say international diplomacy is like disagreements in the family. Isn't it possible you'd want your mom to mediate between you and your little brother if you had a fight? No, I'd rather beat him up. I'm not going to help you with your hypotheticals and your allegories and your parables and your analogies. The other guy is not obligated to help you with that stuff. So don't ask him to. He may take it and beat you up with it. Again, he's not responsible for your analogies. He's only responsible for his evidence and arguments that he made or his partner made. He is not obligated to help you with analogies and hypotheticals, so don't ask him to. Okay, part two, answering questions. Some keys to answering cross-ex questions. Number one, remember which side you're on. Be or act 100% committed to your position. Your job is to disagree with the other guy, not to reach an amicable settlement with the other team or negotiate a deal or anything. Your job is to oppose them, so oppose them. You're allowed to say no if they say, do you think this is a good, do you think our evidence is working? No. Think our plan will work? No. Do you think your dissads will happen? Yes. So just be committed to your position. You have to be respectful and courteous, but you have to stand up for yourself and your evidence. Another key is refuse to accept their facts, claims, or assumptions hidden in the question. For example, since illegal immigrants cause crime, how can police arrest them under status quo rules? Well, I don't agree that they cause crime. Boom. I've taken out his assumption that was built into the question. You don't have to accept their assumptions. You can debate them. Since our evidence said oil imports are hurting the economy, how would the policy you're talking about save jobs in the long run? Answer. I don't think your evidence proved oil imports are hurting the economy. Again, drop out of their assumptions. Their assumptions are not binding on you. Now, here's two options. Sometimes you should answer only the question that was asked. So, for example, they may ask a question like, does the card say there's any economic impact to illegal immigration? Yes. Now he has to ask the follow-up question. Okay, well, where in the card does it say that? Oh, well, let me show you. Boom, boom, boom. Or another option you can take is, okay, does that card say there's any economic impact to illegal immigration? Why, absolutely. In fact, it says blah, 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 blah. It says the study. And then I read, and then it showed that there was 10,000 more, and then the unemployment rate went up. Now, what that means is, and I'm going to keep going until you stop me. So I'm just running my constructive again until you say thank you, and then I'll stop. So those are a couple of different tactics you can use to answer cross-ex questions. As long as you stop when the other guy says stop, either one of them is perfectly fine. This is a good technique. Offer to reread evidence. Not as a stalling technique. Again, I'm not advocating unethical behavior here. It's very often that you need to go back and reread the evidence because they're asking you for some specific detail that was in the evidence. And if they're doing that, that can be a perfectly valid question, but if they're asking you about very specific details, you may not want to just give an answer off the top of your head. The best thing to do is go get, say, let me get that evidence back out and reread it. And then go down to the part of the card they're asking about. Okay, it says here on line 3 about the $1 trillion. Yes, it says there's going to be a $1 trillion trade impact if we do this with Japan. Okay, thank you. Again, it's not a stalling technique, but it's a fair response to answering questions about specific details. And you have the right to do that. I've seen debaters throw away really good evidence. And somebody says, well, did that card really say there was a $1 trillion impact? Oh, no, it didn't. And I heard the card. Yes, it did. But because the debater didn't go back and pick the card back up and get the details, he threw away a perfectly good card. And that leads into number 5. I think as often as possible, a good debate response, a good cross-ex response is, well, our evidence says, blah. If you can answer with, my evidence says this, that can be a much more powerful response. Here's an example. How does your plan significantly reduce air pollution? Significantly reduce pollution. Well, our third solvency evidence says air pollution will go down 48%. How does that have an impact on public health? Our first advantage card says the reduction in air pollution produces a 20% reduction in lung disease. Okay? So he's answering questions with, our evidence says. Boom. Our evidence said this. Our evidence said that. It's not about what I say. It's about what our evidence says. I find that persuasive when debaters do that. Okay. Oh, we've heard this before. Sometimes I don't know is the right answer. Okay, we've got a little movie. Oops, it looks like it's trying to start. We're going to watch a little movie. The story that goes behind this movie, it's a clip from a Perry Mason episode, the old lawyer back in the 50s. In the story that you're about to see, there's a man named Paul Drake, who's a private investigator who works for Perry Mason. Perry Mason is going to be representing. Paul Drake's going to come up to a house, and he's going to see inside the house, there's a man inside the house kind of ransacking the house, looking around. That man is Perry Mason's client. So Paul Drake wants to help this man who's in the house. So they're supposed to be working together. All right? That man is going to be put on trial for the murder of the guy who got killed. Alright? So Drake wants to help him because he didn't do it. But he looks awfully guilty because he's in the house. Okay? So watch what happens as Paul Drake gets cross-examined about what he saw, what happened when he arrived at the house. That's Paul Drake. Okay, now watch the cross-examination about what just happened.
Mr. Drake, when you arrived at the decedent's house at 7:55, was the defendant there?
Yes, he was.
What was he doing?
Looking around.
Wasn't he searching the place?
He said he was.
Did he say how long he'd been there?
Yes, 5 minutes.
And he hadn't called the police?
He hadn't.
I'm asking you, Mr. Drake, had he?
I don't know.
Mr. Drake, did the defendant say he had not called the police?
Yes.
Thank you. Your witness, counsel.
All right. Well, you see the difference between had he called the police and did he say he had not called the police? Can you hear the difference between those two questions? Paul Drake doesn't know whether he called the police or not, right? Because he wasn't there when the man arrived. Could have been lying, right? He could have actually called the police and been lying about that when he said he hadn't called them. So Drake doesn't literally know whether he called the police or not. And so his answer, I don't know, was the correct answer. Number 7. Turnaround demands for evidence about things that are impossible to prove or that should be the burden of the other team. Here's an example. If we impose those sanctions in your plan, isn't it likely that Slavonia will get mad and destabilize the Balkan region? Well, what's the right answer to that? I don't know. Because you're asking me to be a mind reader and read the minds of all the leaders of Slavonia, what they would do. I'm not a mind reader or a wizard. I can't predict the future. So if you're asking me, my only answer I could give would be, I don't know. Well, can you prove Slavonia won't retaliate if we pass your plan? Well, if you want to run that as an argument in your next speech, we'll be happy to respond. I'm not going to help him with his dissads. Not my job. It's his job. He wants to run dissads. His job to prove them. I am under no obligation to help him. So that's how you turn around those kind of things. Okay, sharp response to demands for more evidence. Somebody does the old, can you read more evidence? Turn it around on them. What happens if you say yes? Let me ask you this. For a candidate, what's the problem with saying, okay, on your third point there, can you read more evidence about that? What's the problem with saying yes to that question, Sarah? Why is it bad to say yes if someone asks you, can you read more evidence on that point? Okay, that's one reason why you don't want to do it, because you're letting him write your next speech for you, and that's not his job. Jackie O? No, that would be a good thing. You'd like to waste his cross-ex time, but there's a better reason not to. Joseph? Okay, they could scream and yell that you didn't do what you promised. Sure. There's another big issue, though. If I say, on your third point, well, I don't like that card you read. Could you bring up more evidence? If you say yes, what are you admitting? That's what he's asking for, stuff you didn't read before, Betsy. Thank you. If you say yes, you're admitting that you're agreeing with him that the card was bad. Why do you want to do that? If he says, well, I don't like that third card you read, could you read more? I'm going to say, let me hear you refute that one first, and then I'll see what else I need to bring up. Turn it around and kick it back. It's his problem, it's not my problem that you don't like my evidence. It's your problem. You need to refute it before I decide whether I read more or not. So debate him. Don't just give up and roll over and play dead. I'd say a little more politely. I would say, after I hear your response to what we already read, then we'll decide what else, other evidence we need to bring up. So I'm not committing to reading more evidence. I didn't commit. I say, I will decide later what we need to bring up. After I hear your response. Now I turn it around. Now he has to respond first. I may not have any more evidence, but who knows? We'll see. Of course, if I don't have any more, then later I'm going to say, well, obviously I don't need to read anymore because he didn't refute my card that I did read. Know when to stop talking. This is easy. When the other guy says thank you, that's when you stop. End of discussion. There's never a good time to keep rambling after the other guy says stop. Never, ever, ever. Just stop. Don't ever be the one who's being impolite and rambling in cross-ex. Now, if he doesn't say stop and you feel like rambling, go ahead and ramble. But the minute he says thank you, stop. Don't worry about the damage that it might cause. Don't worry about what you just admitted. Just stop. But if I'm judging, I don't have as big a problem with examiners taking full control of the cross-ex. I think the examiner has every right to start and stop the questions whenever he wants to. But if he's being abusive about it, like if the guy's trying to give a yes or no answer and you stop him before he can even do that, okay, yeah, you're being rude. But if he's given his yes or no answer and then he's rambling, you have the right to cut him off. If I'm judging. Here's my philosophy. Obviously, judges differ. Because, like I said, when I was debating NFL in 1979, I did that exact same thing. And I won the round. Because I just started asking him all kinds of questions. He kept answering. As long as he keeps answering, I'll keep doing it. But as soon as he says stop, I have to stop because it's his cross-ex. So that is my personal philosophy. Obviously, some judges don't like that. So I would say know your judge or be really careful about doing that. Because it might backfire on you. So it really depends on the judge. Okay. After dinner, we're going to do a cross-ex lab.